hasta qué punto no se dispara el tipo de cambio, hay una mayor devaluación, que la fuga de capitales se agrave más y que en ese contexto entremos en una depresión económica y la única forma de ahorro es netamente la especulación de compra de dólares. En ese contexto sí, la Argentina va a tener una crisis económica y social. Hay que ver por eso hasta dónde financieramente la Casa Blanca sostiene a través del FMI a la economía argentina, pensando en que hoy el Grupo de Lima desconoce al gobierno de Venezuela. Entonces, la Casa Blanca financia tanto políticamente y financieramente a la Argentina porque sabe que el objetivo sigue siendo Venezuela.
El presidente Nicolás Maduro de Venezuela da 48 horas al cártel de Lima para que rectifiquen su postura. Escuchemos al primer mandatario bolivariano.
Compañeros civiles y compañeros militares, hombres y mujeres del pueblo, está en marcha un golpe de Estado ordenado desde Washington, ordenado desde el cartel de Lima contra el gobierno legítimo y constitucional que yo presido. Y les digo, el pueblo venezolano sabrá responder cualquier intentona, cualquier acción que se pretenda hoy, mañana o cuando se pretenda. Y la revolución bolivariana se ha venido preparando para enfrentar y derrotar cualquier quinta columna de traidores y traidoras que pretenda violentar la vida interna de Venezuela, llámese como se llame. Y vamos a salir airosos, y vamos a salir bien, y vamos a despejar el camino hacia adelante de Venezuela, hacia el futuro. Han convertido una toma de posesión formal, protocolar, natural, de un país democrático, demostradamente libre y democrático como Venezuela, en una guerra mundial. En el pasado mes de septiembre, por toda la prensa y los cables mundiales, trataron de hilvanar a un grupo pequeño de traidores para crear un disturbio.
El sociólogo francés Thierry Meyson habla sobre la política exterior de Washington hacia Venezuela y a otras partes del mundo. Thierry Meyson habló ante el micrófono de Erika Ortega Sanoja.
Desde la publicación por parte del presidente Barack Obama del decreto ejecutivo contra Venezuela, están preparando una guerra contra Venezuela. El trabajo que hacen con los elementos que aquí llaman oposición es muy similar a lo que pasó en Siria y también antes en Túnez, en Egipto, en Libia, lo que ocurre en Yemen.
Esas revoluciones de colores y revoluciones o primaveras árabes que así llamadas, ¿no?
No, al comienzo parece una revolución de color, pero el objetivo no es el mismo porque no se trata de derrocar un gobierno y de reemplazarlo por la oposición. Se trata de utilizar al gobierno y a la oposición para que se enfrenten y destruir el país. A Estados Unidos no le interesa quién está en el poder. Su cuestión, su problema, es destruir el país y el Estado. Es decir, la capacidad de resistencia de ese pueblo.
¿Y en este caso usted cree que en Venezuela está sucediendo eso? ¿Buscan destruir a Venezuela como un Estado-nación?
Sí, exacto. Creo que los venezolanos no se dan cuenta de lo que está preparándose.
¿De qué forma? A ver.
Al comienzo de las primaveras árabes, los estados, los países afectados, pensaban que era un problema entre el gobierno y la oposición. Pensaron que Estados Unidos quería que los hermanos musulmanes o un grupo semejante llegaran al poder. Sí, en efecto, en cada uno de esos países, Estados Unidos empujó a los hermanos musulmanes, pero no para que llegaran al poder. Eso se ve en Egipto, donde los hermanos musulmanes llegaron al poder, los sacaron y luego volvieron. Y eso puede durar mucho tiempo. El objetivo, en realidad, es destruir el Estado.
Y aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de RTN, de Telesur, de Radio de Naciones Unidas, del Informativo Farco, de Hispan TV y del diario La Jornada. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Together, Think of me, baby, whenever some sweet guy comes along singing his song. Don't mess around, you got to be strong. Just stop, I really love you. Stop, I'll be thinking of you. Look in my heart and let love keep us together. You belong to me now. Ain't gonna set you free now. When those guys start hanging around, talking me down, deal with your heart and you won't hear a sound. Just stop, 'cause I really love you. Stop, I'll be thinking of you. Look in my heart and let love keep us together. Young and beautiful, but someday your looks will be gone. When the others turn you off, who will be turning you off?
Check it out. This is Sun Tripper Spot Jones. You listen to 101.1 FM, unlicensed, independent, non-commercial. Get your punk ass up, man. You sitting there making that top ramen. You don't got no goddamn hot sauce. We do it with the hot spice and spice. Living legend, mystic journeyman, worldwide. Bump this. Get up, turn it up. Yeah.
Revolution.
Free radio.
Exactly. Respect and thank you.
$500 reward. To you for helping us find a new free radio studio location. We need something urgently. We are gone out of here on the 20th. Need about 200 square feet of location. We can build this little shack. We can use someone's shed, a closet perhaps. We do need a bathroom. We need electricity, and we can wire that in as well. Again, $500 to the person that finds such a location. We need it for about a year. Contact us at frsc@freakradio.org. Online, freakradio.org. P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And the $500 goes to you.
die up there.
To save his life, call his wife in. Nothing to say, but what a day. How's your boy been? Nothing to do, it's up to you. I've got nothing to say, but it's okay.
Good morning, good morning, good morning,
yeah. Going to work, don't wanna go. Feeling low down. Heading for home, you start to roam, then you're in town. Everybody knows there's nothing doing, everything is closed, it's like a ruin. Everyone you see is half asleep, and you're on your own, you're in the street. After a while, you start to smile, now you feel cool. Then you decide to take a walk by the old school. Nothing has changed, it's still the same. I've got nothing to say, but it's okay.
Good morning.
Everyone you see is full of life. It's time for tea and meet the wife. Somebody needs to know the time. Glad that I'm here. Watching the skirt just start to flirt. Now you're in gear. Go to a show, you hope she goes. I've got nothing to say, but it's okay.
Good morning.
So, welcome to another edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. This is Thursday, January 10th, 2019. This evening, it's going to be a flashback for all our fans out there because I've spent my afternoon at the protest and interview with Chief Andy Mills, who ended up telling us nothing we didn't know already and not offering to change any policies or respond to any complaints about from RV folks who were concerned, particularly one of them, Alicia Cole, that she was being targeted by Officer Joe Habee or other enforcement officers who were getting complaints that were unjustified and essentially finding ways of going after her or finding ways of disturbing her and her four-person, three children and one partner family. Andy was very polite. He stayed out there for half an hour or more listening to different folks express sometimes angry, sometimes friendly concerns, but ended up saying that he would not change any of the policies he currently had or issue any, you know, alter any of the instructions he was giving to his officers. Anyway, so what we have instead of a series of new bits of interviews and commentary, which I'll probably be playing on Sunday, although I'm having technical problems and I hope I can resolve those by Sunday, is a flashback. And that flashback is to January 8th, 2015, not going back as far as I usually do, when we're going to be reviewing a number of things, but the main focus and the reason I chose it is because of protests about police department policies, the SCPD's policies, specifically or kind of mainly or maybe the initiative was because of community concern about the armored personnel carrier-like Bearcat vehicle, which former police chief Kevin Vogel secured without any kind of public input, public notice, or public vote. There are other items that I'm talking about in this flashback, which concern vending problems downtown, the stay-away orders coming up before council for the expansion of that law, which I'm hoping will now be eliminated, but we have no guarantee of that. And then Mayor Don Lane's deceptive decorum rules shifts designed, again, to further constrict critics who are trying to retain the right to record at City Council from various positions in the room. So, check it out. I hope you enjoy it. And also, from 6 to 8 tonight, there's a Poor People's Campaign get-together out at the Highlands Park Senior Center in Ben Lomond. That's right beyond Felton, along Highway 9 at 8500 Highway 9. It runs again from 6 to 8, Poor People's Campaign. I am probably not going to be there. I had hoped to be there. I think Cynthia Berger from the Santa Cruz Tenants Association, who also works with Huff around the rights of people in their RVs and their vehicles, or should we say non-propertied people, as she calls them, people without ownership of large chunks of land or housing, who really share common interests, whether they're renters or homeless folks or RV dwellers in whose vehicles are their home. Anyway, I hear she's likely to be there. You can go check it out, 6 to 8 at 8500 Highway 9 in Ben Lomond. And I'll be back with hopefully a regular show, assuming I can get my technical equipment back in shape, on Sunday, 9:30 in the morning. And if you want to catch me between times, give me a call on the Huff line. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And the phone number is 423-4833. Give me an email and join our email list, and you'll get advance notice of these shows at rnorse3@hotmail.com. Enjoy the show, enjoy the flashback, and keep your eyes open on the streets, mostly to protect each other. Lots of interesting stuff coming up, at least a lot of interviews in the last few days, which I'm going to be hoping to play on the show. This is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, for those who just tuned in and have no idea what I'm talking about. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, the only independent radio station, truly independent radio station in the area. Not for long, unless we get some funding. We're rapidly sinking beneath the waves, as well as in need of a place to go to put up a transmitter, which is equally important if you want to speak to people who are listening with their radios, not just their computers. So I'm going to encourage you, everyone, again, even all you old timers who are really tired of hearing this message, to, I don't know, look around, talk to friends, have friends talk to friends, think about it. We need a place to put up a transmitter. We're going to be losing our transmitter site very shortly. And that can be almost any place except in the very deep downtown trough. It can be almost anywhere in Santa Cruz where there's a second story or a tree or some such elevating opportunity for the transmitter to be antenna to be hooked to. So if you have any ideas, contact us at freakradio.org, F-E-R-A-K-R-A-D-I-O, freakradio.org, and we will listen and hopefully learn from what you've got to tell us. Also, we will take money, stamps, coins, old antiques, various items of assistance for radio-ish stuff, electronic equipment, expertise, and we're also interested in your becoming a part of Free Radio, which you can do by talking to a Free Radio Collective member and having them bring you into the secret society. And even if it's actually not that secret, filling out an application form online, getting it to us. And we have open times where you can actually put out your shows. And if you don't know how to do it, we can teach you how to do it. If they can teach me, they can teach anyone. They haven't really done such a terribly good job in that. But, hey, I'm still hopefully learning. So contact us at freakradio.org. We are in need of you. And I think, you know, you may get some benefit from us. You may even be in need of us. I mean, I know that may sound a little presumptuous, but I think it's true. So you can also give a call to the organization I work with, and I will pass on your messages to the Free Radio Collective. That's the Huff organization, Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And it's at 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, which is 423-4833. So there. Well, now this is about the time the show is actually supposed to begin. And so I don't really feel it's really to the point to play the Pins and Needles theme song again, you know. Sing me a song of social significance, that thing. So instead I'll proceed with a little something else. And we will then launch off into the usual stuff in the show. Also, hopefully with your phone calls, 427-3772. 427-3772 is the call-in number here. So you got some breaking news, particularly around stuff on the streets. That's my particular interest. Let me know. Let me hear from you. And let us all hear what the news is that you have. If you have questions, announcements, comments, same thing is true. I'm to give, so I'm interested in doing them. But I'm also interested in kind of letting you know what's coming up on the air here. Maybe I can do that if I can get the proper computer connections, which isn't always so hard to do. And let's see what we got here. Got a couple of emails from Mayor Don Lane this evening. Unexpectedly, Don and I aren't usually kind of friendly chitter-chatters, although I have asked him for an interview. I usually do with every incoming mayor, as well as some several pointed questions regarding the Bearcat. And I can't seem to get really straight answers out of the city in terms of the documents that are pretty certainly there as to, for example, when the actual deadline was for applying for it that required the sneak pass through the city council that happened on December 9th. Anyway, in any case, he advised me that there's going to be some interesting things coming up on the agenda that I had actually no idea were coming up. One of them has to do with a change in the rules regarding audio recording at City Council. Not of great interest to anybody, but reporters, and particularly me, because I'm the only reporter
who went in with, and still occasionally goes in with, the primitive equipment of old tape recorders and handheld ones at that, and has been arrested for trying to record at the traditional spot I've been at. And this is per the decorum rules that have been that were set up to discourage homeless activists back in the early days of Mayor Fitzmaurice's reign in 2001, when he was just coming off of he'd actually initiated a lawsuit on behalf of his staff member, Anna Brooks, because we were essentially exposing the hypocrisy of the city around winter shelter. Fitzmaurice was a Green Party mayor, the only one we've ever had, who refused to follow the Green Party state platform, which has to do with ending sleeping bans, or at least trying to end sleeping bans against homeless people across the state and in the city of Santa Cruz specifically. So we had a bunch of people coming into his office in the winter. We served coffee outside his office, and this office was we didn't actually go into his private office, but there was a public area where people would come and ask to make appointments and sit around and wait for people who were on the city council to come in so they could talk to them and so forth. And that's what we did on a continuous basis. And this began to annoy him a great deal, so he eventually went to court to get an injunction against us, and did for a while until it was thrown out many months later. But part of that injunction, or part of his actions that followed the injunction, were setting up a series of decorum rules at city council designed to punish errant activists and to rein them in. One of those rules was this: thou shalt not leave your tape recorder and walk out of the room and go to the bathroom and then come back. And he gave no explanation for it. There's never been an explanation given for it. And I understand Lane now says he's going to change that rule, or modify it, or who knows, maybe strengthen it, for all I know. And he didn't tell me what the change was, but he says it will be up online shortly, and that's going to be something I'm interested in knowing about. Perhaps you will be too. And while we're waiting for that to unfold, I don't know if the city administrator or clerk, Bren Lehr, has actually put it up yet, but I'm going to take a look to see if the city council agenda has gone up. But while I do, let's go back and hear a little from folks whose voices you don't usually hear except on this station. This is from the Food Not Bombs meal from last Sunday.
Down here at the
Dean on Sunday, the 4th of January, talking with
Frankenfurter.
And Frankenfurter, you've got some interesting looking wire trees here, and you're inside, you're sprawled outside the blue zone.
Why you got a front?
And actually, this is a little bit either before or after Food Not Bomb. Sorry. This is on Pacific Avenue. This is one of the vendors who you can find creating little works of art that are kind of wire trees. She's often there with her two children.
Why you got a front?
And you say these tables, and you have two of them here. They're busy to assemble?
They are a little bit difficult to assemble, yeah.
And are you...
scratched up by assembling them, too.
Did they cost you? Because you're not supposed to have your stuff on the ground, I understand.
Well,
in fact, you have a blanket on the ground in violation of a city ordinance.
I don't know about that.
Not to mention orange juice, a banana, and a... This is a shocking situation.
Anti-Plato law.
The who?
Anti-Plato law.
Is there an anti-Plato law?
I think you guys are just making up stuff.
Oh, Play-Doh. I thought it was a Plato. Interesting. Well, there are two of... thuggish-looking first alarm security guards over there in uniform, but they aren't harassing you. Why not?
Because I'm following the rules.
What do you think?
Do you have anything to say about it? No.
He shakes his head. So you haven't been told to move along every hour, I take it?
Yeah, I move every hour.
So you have to take these two tables and all your assembled stuff, your two children, and any animals that are following you to another area.
Right.
So how many times have you had to move today?
A few.
And are you able to find a blue zone to go to?
Yeah, I I wish they were there were more big ones like that. That 3x3 is a great one over there.
Is there much competition for these zones?
I'd have to say there's more spaces than there used to be.
I've noticed a few extra spaces, I got to admit. But on the other hand, there are a lot of open spaces that are unused that could be used.
I think the problem with the spaces so close together makes it feel like a flea market, though.
Well, what's wrong with a flea market?
I don't know. I just don't want people right next to me if I don't know them.
You're going to get out of the way. There you go. And we've got some customers who've arrived. Thank you.
Thank you, Norris.
And across the street from the wire tree maker, we have a whole series of burned onto wood portraits and pictures near the red zone, but outside the red zone, also extending 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 feet along, which is fine with me. And we had First Alarm security walking up and down here earlier, apparently without any kind of problem. Up here we have Keith's Commandant, Ecclesiastes, group of guys. How's it going, man?
And it's actually, again, numerous displays along Pacific Avenue are illegally situated, which is fine. It's just an example, though, of I hear some people being harassed, others being allowed to do their thing. It's it sounds like a recipe ripe for and rife with favoritism and the ability, you know, if you can form the right connections with the right security, police, hosts, people, and then even then you're not going to be too sure because who knows what the next shift is going to say. What we're talking about are the little marked-in areas. I call them performance pens or cages. They are little half of a square marking that mark out a larger square. Instead of having the entire area outlined, there are these sort of small blue, yellow, and red marks on in the Santa Cruz downtown Pacific Avenue sidewalk, which mark out the only places it's legal to perform with an open guitar case or sit peacefully and silently even, or if you want to say something, you can, if you are seeking money or something else of value, or set up a political table and register voters. If you are outside any of these areas, you are illegal and subject to a fine of hundreds of dollars. And you also, and this, of course, is the crowning indignity, you have to move not as the pamphlet that's just been created and is distributed by the hosts and is available at the kiosk in front of New Leaf Market, not as the pamphlet there says every hour, but only after you have been told you've been there for an hour. Then you have to move. You decline to move at that point. Then you are guilty of a violation. But in fact, they want you to internalize all this and move along every hour yourself. Again, creating a situation that can make it uncomfortable and difficult for people, a number of people, at least they've spoken to me about that, and hasn't got a lot of justification to, other than that it, I guess it panders to the aesthetic sensibilities of some of the more conservative council members, merchants, and perhaps their constituencies or residents who are have been so advising or pressing them to make changes. The latest Performance Pens deal was billed as a change in the right direction, or perhaps the left direction, or the positive direction. Let's hear some more.
So, any comments for Free Radio? What are you guys up to? How's it going? He's the man to talk to? He's the man. Who should I talk to? You're the man.
Okay, well, yeah, I guess.
I'm Robert, by the way.
You're who?
I'm Robert.
All right, I'm Qual.
And this is for Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Oh, okay.
And I saw you earlier up the street. I guess they're moving you along every hour.
Yeah, that's their city codes and ordinances, I guess.
Crazy shit.
Well, you know, it is what it is. You know, this is what you call their kingdom, so they operate within their own laws.
So here you are, all three of you, operating. What are you up to? You got the Bible here. You've got your own sign about mentioning Israel and a number of other prophets, perhaps?
We're out here to let the people know that we're waking up the 12 tribes of Israel and bringing people back to the law, statutes, commandments, because Israel was given the authority over the Holy Scriptures to bring forth the truth. And the truth will not be brought through unless it comes through Israel first.
Now, how is Santa Cruz responding to your message?
Most of the people that come by and stop and talk to us, you know, if they have the time, they'll sit back. We'll go through the scriptures. You can't refute the scriptures because thy word is truth. So they receive us pretty well.
What's the impact on poor people in Santa Cruz? Are you yourself from Santa Cruz or from out of town?
From out of town. 831 area code, but yeah, out of town.
And because, you know, we have a lot of poverty growing situation, police brutality, things of that sort. What's the impact of your work on these issues?
Well, the Most High tells us to come back to the law, statutes, commandments. So if you come back to the law, statutes, commandments, then it'll take care of itself. And so, because it's a curse that's what was put on the children of Israel, you know, if we don't follow His laws, that these things will happen to us.
So when you see these protests against the shooting of, you know, people like Gardner and Michael Brown in Ferguson, what's the response of your group, and what's your personal response?
Well, my personal response is through these scriptures. Like was said before, it's a curse that the Most High sent these people against the children of Israel. So if Israel don't follow the law, statutes, commandments, these curses will pour upon them and stuff. So the way to correct it, no protesting, because, you know,
you don't believe in protesting.
Don't believe in protesting at all. Just believe in following the law, statutes, commandments, and those things won't happen to us.
Well, they have been happening frequently in the last few years.
Absolutely, because our people don't know who they are, and they're operating under another god. And so once we come back to the God of Israel and stuff, then those things won't happen to us. And that's the key. That's the key to the whole thing. Now, people, you know, think that they have to protest, and these got these movies encouraging them to protest. Anybody with any kind of wisdom will tell them, hey, man, this is why this is happening. The Most High Himself in heaven is bringing these people against us, you know, to destroy us until we come back to these laws. So once we come back to these laws, these things will stop.
How have the police been treating your group?
Well, the police, for the most part, they help. They don't have a problem with us, and you know, we deal with security. They're just doing their job. Of course, you know, we don't like certain things, but hey, you know, they work with us, so I can't complain too much.
And we've been talking with,
Far as
your name again.
Oh, Qual.
And your associates are.
We have Zamar and Malakwa.
Thank you both. I thank all three of you.
Oh no, all praises to the Father, and I just all praises for you allowing me to have this forum.
Think nothing of it. I'll give you a card.
Yeah.
Here I am at the Food Not Bombs meal, and it's about 4:30. We have a man who may or may not be talking in a British accent, but he got a stay away order. What's the stay away order stuff?
Well, I'm sorry.
Where'd you get it?
I received the ban on the levee.
And when did you get it?
Was it yesterday morning? It was yesterday morning.
What time, more or less?
Roughly between 8 and 9 p.m.
And what were you, a p.m.? You mean in the evening?
I mean a.m., I apologize.
And for what infraction did you get with the stay order? Did you get a ticket?
Yes, I didn't pay much attention to it, honestly, other than I'm just processing that the ban means that if I were to set foot on the levee and have someone follow up on whether or not my identity needed to be checked, I would get locked in a cage.
True. Or at least they can do that in theory. Who was the officer or ranger who gave you this wonderful opportunity?
I cannot recall the name. I didn't feel the need to follow up on it.
And what this man is talking about is a one-day stay-away order, which for the last year has gone out to between 500 and 1,000. Well, it's gone out 500,000 times. I don't know if it's gone out to 500 to 1,000 people. It might have been a number of people getting multiple stay-away orders. The stay-away orders up to now have only been for one day, and they are only given
At the discretion of the ranger or police officer, if an infraction citation is also written up, and that's a citation that states that the ranger has a probable cause, or the cop has probable cause, to believe you are guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of violating a particular code section of the law. And the code sections, of course, that are most frequently applied are sleeping, camping, being in an area after dark, and smoking. That's what our research has found by looking over the hundreds of citations that were given out in the last year. Clearly anti-homeless stuff, and also stuff that has very little to do with real public safety issues. It can be rather costly for the city, but is designed to drive away people and make it uncomfortable and difficult for them, establish a reputation of Santa Cruz as a place to avoid if you're traveling and you haven't got money to stay in a motel or hotel or with a friend, or unless you're very good at camouflage or hiding out or whatever. Or unless you happen to be one of the few who is inside on the homeless lack of services center, actually, as I usually call it. Or if you're on the waiting list, you're supposed to have citations for sleeping and camping dismissed, but not necessarily for sleeping in a closed area. And more areas are being closed at night. Regardless of the fact whether they're being abused or whether they are there's any rationale for closing them other than to simply make them off limits for people who have a desperate need to find some place to be during the day and at night, but particularly at night when they're trying to sleep. So this man is talking about a stay away order, which is going to be coming up in a much more severe form in 5 days at the Santa Cruz City Council meeting on Tuesday in the afternoon. It's on the afternoon agenda, which starts at 2:30. I have been able to look at the agenda. I'm beginning to look at it now, and I'll be talking about it more later in the show. It will extend very severely the stay-away order powers of rangers and cops, powers which are not subject to oversight by the courts unless somebody has the wherewithal to actually go get a writ, which is a difficult thing to obtain and a difficult thing to apply for those of us who are amateurs in the law. You usually need to get an attorney to do it for you, that will stop enforcement of this law. And I believe there is some movement afoot to have a general injunction put against this law. Activist Steve Plaich of the Homeless Legal Persons Assistance Project has repeatedly told me that he is planning to file such papers even before this upcoming city council meeting, and certainly before, if it passes, which it most likely will, although there are going to be plenty of us protesting against it and speaking against it at the council on Tuesday. We'll be having, I guess, a huff protest there starting at 2. That's in the City Hall, right outside the City Council chambers at City Hall at 809 Center Street for all of you newcomers in town. In any case, the expanded law will mean not just 1 day stay away orders, but 1 week, 1 month, 6 months, and 1 year. And that's all without any court process. There is a kind of a token administrative process which they set up after being told by the local ACLU that what they were doing was naughty, naughty, naughty. And so they said, oh, we'll have the city manager's representative look it over, and if the people can prove that they're innocent, then there won't be a stay-away order. There's all kinds of things wrong with this, which I'll be going into at greater length on Sunday. And also there'll be a Huff meeting on Saturday for those of you who want to get into civil rights actions to defend homeless folks at the Food Not Bombs meal down at 4 o'clock right outside the post office, the main post office in downtown Santa Cruz. So that's lots of stuff coming up at City Council on Tuesday. Also the Bearcat military vehicle, not on the agenda, but a number of people are concerned to bring the issue to the City Council during the oral communications period for items not on the agenda at 5 o'clock. Let's return, however, to Food Not Bombs on the 4th of January and various interviews there.
So are you the only one who got this, or did others?
Just I.
Were you alone?
My friend was down the way a tad bit. I'm not sure how close, because I was unconscious. I quite enjoyed...
Sleeping or drunk?
I don't drink.
I was
sleeping, and I find it quite funny how they call them camping tickets, as if it were a little weekend adventure, and it would be the levee would be quite a poor place to take a camping trip. I was just trying to hide from the police and not have to walk miles to do it because I was tired.
How long have you been in town now?
I think it's been a couple of weeks about this point. I've been receiving quite the amount of aggressive police attention.
They like you?
I don't know if they like me so much as they want to harm me.
And how many citations have you gotten or stay away orders in that time?
I believe I've only gotten one stay away order this month. I was banned from the skate park for a day in October for, again, sleeping in the skate park. Though the locals didn't seem to mind. The police, however, did.
Interesting. Did the police tell you on either of these occasions they had a complaint?
They always seem to say that there's been complaints in the past, but I don't really care too much to trust the things they tell me.
Did they give you a legal place to go?
No. I think they more so just try and focus on that it's illegal to not have a box to crawl inside of at night. They don't really put much attention on places you can go. Maybe they'll offer up a shelter or something, but which are usually jam-packed anyway, filled with tweakers who run around doing all types of things that I don't think they really seem to mind the influx of meth in the town because it gives them a reason to put number of people in jail, which they just coincidentally make quite an amount of money off of. I suppose they call that job security, but what do I know? I'm just a homeless person.
And your name again is?
Meow.
Thank you, Meow. Any comments?
How you doing?
How you doing, man?
Right.
Any reports from the street?
I haven't been on the street in a long time. Or in a while, anyway.
But I see you have scored some cookies.
Yeah, those are for the people I stay with.
Oh, excellent.
Salutations.
Thank you, Meow. Well, thank you. I'll continue my good work here. And look for
I forget
work.
What the... What?
So, do you want to say who you are or not?
Well, I don't think so.
So we have an anonymous report. You say a friend of yours has a report about the latest gun activities in the hills?
No. They use paintball guns.
Paintball gun activities in the hills,
right.
Involving dummies dressed up as homeless people?
Correct.
And, well, any more details?
Not at this moment, please.
Well, thank you, man.
Sure. Selling some kind of suit.
Now, you mentioned that Julie of the full-timers with her two children was a paintball victim?
Correct.
At least she reported that to you?
Yes.
You didn't see the car yourself?
No. But I remember telling her what I know, and she said that she had been a victim of it.
Interesting. Did she say when? Or?
Oh, this was at least a year ago, I'm sure.
I see. Yeah, she seemed pretty cheerful when I saw her, but interesting stuff. Thank you.
Yeah.
Cause.
Talking with?
Anonymous.
Anonymous. So yesterday you were denied SSI?
Yeah, and I got a letter saying that I don't have enough work credits. And I don't have the work credits because I'm disabled. And so I don't understand that. You know, it's like I have a brain tumor, and they have that report. I have ischemia.
Which means
the oxygen is being cut off to my brain. So I'm a walking stroke waiting for a place to happen. And I know I shouldn't be smoking.
But you're a habitual tobacco user.
Not habitual.
Occasional tobacco.
Occasional, yeah. And so I need to work 2 years in order to get enough credits to get SSI. And how am I supposed to work?
That.
When I can't work.
Well, you're saving the people of the state of California and the United States money. Look at it that way.
Yeah, that's
die early and you save us money.
Die early, save us money. That's what they want, you know. Somebody said I should get an advocate and
yeah, that's probably a good idea.
And go down and say, look, you know, I mean, I haven't
give
worked
me my fucking money.
Yeah, I live on $140 a month.
That's not much.
And $160 in food stamps. And I live in my van. I freeze my butt off.
And you attend the Food Not Bombs meal.
Yeah, and I attend the Food Not Bombs because otherwise I wouldn't have, you know, anything to eat. And it's ridiculous. I mean, what am I supposed to do, you know?
Die quickly and silently if possible.
And
no, what you're supposed to do is say, fuck this shit, get an advocate, go in there and give what you deserve. Of course, it's not even what you deserve. You deserve much more, but, you know, what the minimum, blah, blah, blah.
I know, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's like...
Have you spoken to Steve Plaich about this?
No. Who?
Plaich is a guy who does a thing called the Homeless Persons Legal Assistance Project. Living in your vehicle,
okay.
You are, you know, houseless in that way. Mm-hmm. And he's available occasionally at the. Well, I'll give you his phone number.
Okay.
It's not hard to. You can give him a call. He lives in a vehicle too, so don't expect great things from him.
Okay.
But he is an attorney of a kind. I'm not quite sure exactly what his kind is, but he's also. His phone number is 46.
Wait.
I guess my order.
Okay.
His phone number is 466. I'll give it to you again. 466-6078, and I'll tell you a second time.
466-6078. 6078.
And you can, his name is
what?
Steve Plaich. Rhymes with H. P-L-E-I-C-H. Plaich. And he's available.
P-I-C-H. P-L-E.
And he is at the Red Church every Monday. He serves bagels, or you might have seen him. You'll go to the Red Church meal on Monday?
No.
Check it out. Go there, you'll be able to find him. 6 o'clock. Look for the tall guy with the silver hair. Ask for Steve Plaich, rhymes with H.
Okay.
And it's not that I would recommend he's going to do all kinds of wondrous things, but he might give you some ideas.
Right, okay.
And we've been talking with?
Anonymous.
Thank you, Anonymous.
Thanks. It's fucked up.
So, personal continues. Wait.
And I spoke with that same person about a year and a half ago. He was not stuttering at that time. And it was interesting. Maybe he's accurately, one perhaps must assume he's accurately describing his physical condition with this brain tumor thing or whatever. Plaich is available for those who want to get in touch with him. He's regularly out in public, as I said, at the Red Church meal. He's also available at 466-6078, and I do call him on the air here occasionally. Haven't gotten any updates from him in the really recent past, but probably will.
Sitting on that train, caught a glimpse, then catch your name. Like lightning, flash of light, it was just a moment of flight. How could this be? Am I crazy? Hundred times I've ever looked into your eyes, like I found my home. Time doesn't turn till you turn to go. Oh my goodness, I must be crazy. Yeah. thoughts, a sprint for the door. I just had to have you, I just had to have more. The thought that I just lost the love of my life, wrenching and tearing me up inside. A struggle with that damn train door. Stop the train, I tell my sorrows to the floor.
And that was another one by Aria called Come Back to Me from her album, her acoustic session from Mars Studio. It's from earlier this last year. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris. Be with you until 8 o'clock, at which point Uncle Dennis from the Cream to the Dregs comes in and creams you through the dregs. Anyway, he plays a lot of older music, some of which may be familiar to you if you've been around for a while, and maybe if you haven't. Well, I've got the bad news here, so I might as well begin with the news that bothers me most personally, because I've been struggling with this issue for a long time. In a way, it's it's a kind of a small issue, a petty issue, it seems, to some extent. But it's an issue of procedure, and often if the authorities can tightly control procedures, they can significantly impact content and spirit and the entire public mood and the public substance of what goes on. So Don Lane is moving, he's the mayor, for a change in the decorum rules. And what he is doing is he's taking a gamble. He's making a fundamental change in the rules, which adds the following sentence. The current rules read, I think I don't really have the current rules. I have his changes. Some of them seem to be the current rule. While the city council is in session, all persons shall preserve order and decorum. Any person disrupting the council meeting shall be barred by the presiding officer from further attendance at said meeting unless permission for continued attendance is granted by a majority vote of the council. Now, here's the change. Any member of the public who fails to comply with the rules of order and decorum after being warned by the presiding officer, thereby requiring the presiding officer to interrupt the meeting once again to restore order, shall be considered to be disrupting the council meeting. And if you listen to this just sort of casually, it sounds, oh, well, you know, what's wrong with that? Well, what's wrong with that is if the council decides to create rules. For example, they tried to do this at the last meeting when they said you couldn't turn your back on the council when speaking, even though that's clearly First Amendment issue. And Lane attempts to deal with that issue as well in a subsequent decorum rule, right, that I'll be reading immediately following this. He's giving the impression to the public that unless you follow the rules as described by the city council, you are being disruptive and therefore can be ejected from the council and even can be accused criminally of disrupting a council meeting and face a year in jail, which is what they've done with me on a number of occasions, though they've never convicted me of that. Never even tried me for that, actually. They just threaten you, they arrest you, they intimidate you, they may take you into court a little bit, and then they drop it. But the point is to make you scared to express your viewpoint in a way that they don't like to see, but that doesn't really disrupt the meeting. Because what the courts have ruled, what the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has ruled, in the case where I made a brief, fleeting, don't act like a bunch of fascists, mock Nazi salute, when they tried to shut down a member of the public who had her right to speak and the council decided to move on without letting her speak. That was on a peace issue, I believe, 2002. They had me arrested, and their pretext was that I gave them a Nazi salute, or a mock Nazi salute. Don't act like fascists. A real Nazi salute would be, you know, you are my Führer, or something, in a serious way, but that wasn't obviously what I meant. and everybody knew it, including the council. They claimed, however, that that was disruptive because it was indecorous. Lane realized what the courts found is you can't have the council simply saying that a violation of their rules is a disruption. Rather, it has to be something that actually does disrupt the council. So, for example, turning with your back to the council, sitting with a sign, denouncing the council, recording the council from a different angle, or from the angle you've always been at, but they decide you suddenly can't do that anymore. If you violate their rule, and then they say, well, you're violating a rule, and therefore now you have to stop, and if you don't stop, that's a disruption because we had to stop the meeting because you didn't stop. No, they are making the disruptive action in stopping their meeting, unless something that is being done is actually disruptive. And this is what this new rule that Don Lane is proposing is trying to go past, go around, circumvent. He's trying to circumvent the court decision. Disruption has to mean real disruption. It can't mean virtual disruption or potential disruption or violation of the rules that the council doesn't like. It has to be something that disrupts. And simply having the mayor having to stop and say three times, I don't want you to do that, and I'm going to have to stop the meeting because you're doing that, is not you disrupting the meeting. It's him or her disrupting the meeting. But this new change will attempt to get around that and shows his determination to proceed in the way that Lynn Robinson, the former mayor, was proceeding, or so I fear. Now, I emailed Lane before this particular broadcast and invited him to come on the air and talk about it. He may be listening. And, Don, if you are, you're welcome to call in and explain how this rule can stand in the face of the Supreme Court, I should say the Ninth Circuit en banc panel's statement that a disruption has to be a real disruption, not one that is created by the council itself because they don't like something you're doing, even if it violates one of their rules. He can call in, and we'll see if he does. If he doesn't, this is coming up at City Council, and it's going to be... where is it going to be? It's going to be on the... it's item 12 at the end of the consent agenda. And there's plenty of interesting things on this agenda, which I will partially go into today, and I will also go into it, hopefully, in more detail on Sunday. And it gives me a very sinking, sad feeling in my stomach that this is coming up. It means... it looks like it means more legal battles, and it looks like it means more struggle with someone who is putting his chips on the dark side, Don Lane. That's too bad. But it's really not something that I wouldn't have anticipated because Don Lane, well, he's always spouting the most friendly rhetoric, and he's really, in his own way, a very friendly guy. He's certainly more approachable than Lynn Robinson, at least from my money, but he's always hung out with a kind of a dark crowd. I mean, he began trying as a... well, I'm not going to go into his history right now, but I can certainly talk about it at some length later. Another rule that he's proposing is that members of the public will address the city council meeting, shall speak from the public lectern, and speak into the microphone so that comments can be broadcast and recorded. This is, again, a roundabout way of saying don't turn your back on us. Although, obviously, his statement that, you know, you don't need to even speak into a mic anymore because they don't have the traditional mic anymore. They just have a sort of a sound platform from which you can speak. And you can be heard if you choose to turn your back on the council and talk. In fact, you can probably be heard if you speak from the floor. You don't necessarily even have to go up to the podium to speak. These are, again, rules that he is probably going to slam dunk through the council that don't necessarily have any constitutional standing at all. They are... the legislative body is a more open body than, let's say, a courtroom. And even in a courtroom, you're not obliged to come up and speak to the court at the bar. You can stand in the back of the audience, and as long as you're in court, you're there. At least that's what I was advised by an ancient activist from the 90s. I've never done it because courts tend to intimidate me. I know it's hard to imagine, but they do. They intimidate me. And I try to resist that feeling of intimidation, but
it's often difficult to do. No audio-visual recording devices may be left unattended at the speaker's lectern or elsewhere in the council chambers, except individuals may place and leave unattended audio recording devices at the designated location in council chambers on the window ledge adjacent to the press box sign, which I've got no idea where that's going to be. So they're setting up a specific place where you'll be allowed to place your devices. Again, this whole business of going after people, it's actually going after me, with a tape recorder or a small audio device that is left near the lectern, but not on the lectern. It doesn't interfere with the ability of a person to speak or read from papers at the lectern. It's an attempt to sort of rein in behavior in the same way that the kinds of conduct rules on Pacific Avenue are an attempt to rein in behavior. They give the authorities more chance to criticize you. They require you to internalize a kind of authority. They don't give any explanation, and they aren't laid out to the public for any input or discussion of any meaningful type, except the token discussion that happens when they are rubber-stamped and passed through the council, as I'm sure they will be. Another rule they're coming up with is individuals shall not be allowed to bring furniture into council chambers or other items that might obstruct free passage within or ingress to or egress from council chambers, or to place such obstructions in council chamber aisles or passageways, or to bodily obstruct council chamber aisles or passageways. So they're going to claim that, they may claim that standing up off to the side is a form of obstructing the council chambers. I've been bringing a chair into city council and sitting facing the audience because I have to sit next to my recorder in order to attend it. But now he's going to claim the city council will be able, you'll be able to come in and only put it in a very special spot off to the side of the room, which I have no assurance is going to be a spot which you can effectively record from. That's something we'll see. But the main point to me also is forcing you to face under penalty of some kind of criminal charge or exclusion from the council behavior that is bothering really no one except perhaps a council member or two, because they don't like the way you, the message you bring to the council, is not a good way to go in these council meetings in terms of allowing the public the access they need and the freedom they need to make the public expression that they need to do, essentially to overcome entrenched authority, but at least to get the message out of what they're trying to say. So I'll be talking more about these issues, although I kind of shot my bolt, on Sunday. I do a longer show Sunday, 9:30 to 1 on this show. And you might tell me what you think of these rules. Maybe you like them. I've actually been approached by activists, some of whose positions I agree with, who think that I should not tape record at all or audio record at all at council, but, you know, rely on a recording from the city itself. The idea that you cannot have your tape recorder, you can't leave it on a bench, you can't leave it by the side of the room, and walk out of the room and go to the bathroom is completely ridiculous. I would say it's also ridiculous that you can't do this in the best spot to place it, which is, I have found generally, is up by the city council lectern, not necessarily on the lectern. On occasion, I used to put it on the lectern, but when people tend to be using more papers and so forth, I moved it further away from the lectern. And also, I think that placing a device prominently in the face of the council, in the face of the public, reminds everyone that they are being observed by the community. That, you know, they should be advised that their actions are public actions. And I think that is an important thing, and an important message to put out. So again, I'm going to look over this agenda more carefully, and hopefully I'm sure I'll have more to say about it. There's
I'm just kind of looking it over really quickly right now. There's the accessory dwelling unit issue that's coming up as item 15. And there's also, wow, do my eyes deceive me? Let me take a look at this. Wow, the it's very interesting. They are have moved the stay-away order issue to the evening section of the agenda after a coastal permit hearing, which will take God knows how long. Actually, I have no idea how long, but they're putting it at the end of the agenda. So this may happen late at night, which will be interesting because there are some who plan a protest, and the oral communications period is, again, being set in this doghouse area, this less accessible, less public area, really, of 5 o'clock, which is between the council sessions. It, and from my perspective, it is an attempt to marginalize people who and actually discourage public comment. Because if, as used to be the case, it was the beginning of the most important session, the evening session at 7 o'clock, you could be assured of a pretty a large number of people there, as you are, for example, the Board of Supervisors, when it comes at the beginning of a session, because they have other items to listen to, and you get you get out before a pretty large audience. Then it was moved to the beginning of the afternoon session, which has a smaller audience because people are working during the day, many of them. And then it was moved to the end of the afternoon session, which was uncertain because you didn't know when the afternoon session would end. And then it was finally moved to this strange time at 5 o'clock, where half the time the council is already adjourned and everybody's gone back except gone out of the room except for the four or five people who want to speak and the council that has to listen to them and a few staff members who have to stay there. Now, that hasn't been the case in the last month or two because the city council items have kind of gone on through the past 5 o'clock, which is when this public comment period is. So, items coming up on the agenda, the Bearcat, everyone's sort of, many people are still concerned about this armored personnel carrier, which the police department zipped through the council with the vote of Don Lane, the mayor. Only opponent being, in a somewhat wispy, weakly way, Micah Posner. And there's a discussion of it being, there's some significant protests coming up. And also, for those who are interested, Don Lane is declaring January 6th and 7th, yesterday and the day before yesterday, as Neil Coonerty Days. I don't know, is he getting free books or just, I don't know, some sort of pass from the supervisor? For thanking him for his outstanding service and blah, 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 blah. Neil Coonerty is... It isn't that he hasn't done some good things. I think he probably has. I think he's been on the less bad side of marijuana restrictions, which is, by the way, coming up on Tuesday at the City Council... the Board of Supervisors, the County Board of Supervisors, to restrict growers, and I'll talk a little bit about that. But Coonerty has also given us the nasty downtown ordinances in 1994, and he's really a rather violent and thuggish guy when you watch him in action. No offense. Well, I'm not trying to offend him. That's my impression of the way he behaves towards his opponents. And my last interaction with him was trying to use the bathroom in the bookshop Coonerty, or Santa Cruz. He was essentially raging at me in my face to get out, get out, get out. And I told him, your bathroom is funded by city money. Where the hell is it so I can use it, please? And he kept trying to intimidate me and raging at me. Then he started trying to intimidate the video person who was videoing the whole thing and put his thumb in the guy's camera, imprinting it, and he loses his temper easily in a physical way, is what I've found with Coonerty over the years. And that doesn't mean he shouldn't be rewarded or acknowledged for good works. I just don't have a lot of sense of what his good works have been. Maybe those who are fans of Neil, that's the older Coonerty, not the incoming son, Ryan Coonerty, who is, he adds hypocrisy. Yeah, he doesn't have the violent disposition his father does, but he has the temerity to call himself a constitutional lawyer when most of his behaviors on city council as mayor, when he was the mayor and the council member there, now he's on the board of supervisors, was to restrict constitutional activity for people in the city, and particularly for homeless people, which has been my concern. Also, an information item coming up in the council is the Measure K Oversight Semi-Annual Report, which lacks any kind of real oversight but to the police department. And I guess the next thing to do is to kind of begin to go into the impact of the protests, or the actual experience of the protests we did yesterday at the police department. Some of us from HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, did that. And we will go into the fourth round at Cop Corner shortly.
Sitting on that chain. Oh, darling, couldn't find the words to say. I won't forget that day. Self-esteem.
As mentioned before, we had another protest in solidarity with a nationwide concern about police brutality, lack of accountability and transparency, and specifically also focusing on Santa Cruz issues around police misconduct. Right now, we're still trying to wrest from the police department just to look at the citation record of Officer Frank Azua, who has been accused, and there has been video which purports to document racial profiling, where African Americans are getting the kind of attention that the paler versions are not, around such issues as smoking and other petty infractions downtown, which sounds like, oh, what's the problem? Well, the problem is that these are expensive citations, and they can deter you from using public areas downtown. May be ignored by council members Posner and Lane and Terrazas and Matthews and so forth. But they are real concerns to those they impact, and they're concerns to us at Huff because they also tend to impact most strongly homeless people, poor people on the streets. So we have been out in front of the police station on four separate occasions, essentially and admittedly riding the crest, or trying to ride the crest, of the nationwide outrage at the killings of Mike Brown and others, African-Americans, and some non-African-Americans. That's because the police are no respecter of persons or color in terms of their hair-trigger assertion of their authority and their willingness to use different kinds of so-called non-lethal, near-lethal, and lethal force if they feel it's necessary to protect themselves. It should be to serve and protect first ourselves and then you if we get around to it, because that seems to be how things are done, and we want to make sure that that's changed. And of course, that's quite a big project. Involves, for example, looking at the use by the Santa Cruz Police Department of tasers, batons, chokeholds, pain compliance holds, physical blows of various kinds, and so forth, which we've tried to get the documentation of. When are they used? Who uses them? How frequently? What kind of damage is done? And we can't get the records. We got some very vague records, and now we're just getting stonewalled, and there's a new process that's being used at the police department and in the city. They are not responding to emails anymore, or at least they're doing so sporadically. They used to do so with some regularity. Admittedly, after delays and excuses and with deletions, and you have to keep repeating yourself and so forth. But now they're sending letters from the city attorney's office, which say, well, the last letter I got asking for information about when was this Bearcat armored personnel vehicle deadline. Can you show us the document that states this? Because the police department must have it, so let's see it. You know, show us a copy of it. What's the problem? And they say, oh, we need more information about this. I admit I made a broader request for a lot of stuff, but one of them was a very specific request for that. At least was or included that as a request. And neither I, nor as far as I know, John Malkin, nor anyone else has gotten that information. Other than assurances from Deputy Chief Steve Clark that there was only till the end of the year that they had to get this $220,000, I don't want to say it's a white elephant. That doesn't seem proper. It is a menacing device masquerading as a rescue tool. At least it is a potentially menacing device when it's in the hands of a police department that has the kinds of lack of transparency shared by most or many police departments around the country. So anyway, we did this stuff in front of the police department with signs and shouts and petitions and flyers, and this is some of the audio of it.
Coffee if you want it.
So we have passers-by, mostly just passing by. But there's the occasional honk from the occasional honky, even from the occasional non-honky. And I see approaching an artist from ancient times crossing the street. He may have something to tell us. You have a permit to walk across that street, sir? He's pondering this.
No, I don't.
No permit, eh? I see. How interesting.
It's a violation of national security.
Indeed, indeed. So have you come to the protest or just passing by?
Oh, yeah, I came to meet up with somebody. So I'm here to lend my support to the cause of, I guess, what is this? Does this give the Bearcat back? Is that what this is about?
Bearcat and then a number of issues around the police.
Right.
Specifically. Yeah.
Well, I just want to say, I think the Bearcat thing is completely ridiculous because, I mean, even if you just for the sake of argument, accept the premise that we're in this big, scary crime epidemic. The kinds of crimes, you know, that go on here in Santa Cruz, you know, bike theft and, you know, the occasional stabbings or shootings or things like that. You know, whatever it is, how is a tank going to prevent those
rescue
crimes?
Vehicle, please.
Okay, yeah, it's a Bearcat. You know, armored personnel character. So how is having this armored military issue vehicle, kind of stuff they drive around in Iraq, how is that going to lower crime? If somebody's being mugged, are they going to drive the armored vehicle up to the mugging and then sit there in their armored vehicle and say, hey, stop mugging that guy? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's a waste of taxpayer money when, you know, we could be spending money on actually helping people, doing something to end this rental crisis that is about to create a mass exodus from Santa Cruz because so many people can't even afford to live here. I'm hearing people all the time, myself and included, talking about how they want to move somewhere else where it's less expensive. You know, let's do something about solve the real problems. I mean, this is all this is it's a hedge against protests. The point of an armored personnel carrier is to have a rapid deployment vehicle so that you can get a bunch of cops into the scene in a hurry when you need to beat the crap out of some protesters. That's what it's for. It's not for anything else. It doesn't have anything to do with crime. And so you have a deeply unpopular city council who can't get through a meeting without people chanting shame, 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 and they're hedging against their opposition. That's what this is.
Talking with
Colin Campbell Klein.
Thanks, Colin. So I'm talking with...
Oh, hi there. My name is Kyle.
Hey, Kyle. And you say that you've had a, should we say, encounter with Bill Azua, the police officer?
Yes. I do agree that what we did was not exactly legal because we were walking outside, but it's because it was New Year's and everything. And I heard that my buddy over here, I had just met him and I had heard about his times in Iraq, and I wanted to try to at least get a beer for the man on a New Year's because I knew that he had nothing and I wasn't about to let somebody, you know, go unattended and feel like that they were being left out of everything. And I wanted to be a friend to somebody that day. Mm-hmm. I bought two beers for being and him. As soon as we went outside, we cracked him. We were about to go on our way, and we accidentally ran into a bunch of other people who also looked like they were getting ready to have a good night. And as soon as we're about to like sit down and get to know each other and say we didn't even say all of our names yet, they pull over onto the car into the parking lots.
They
be sitting, just sitting and chilling, not
who's
even
they?
Bothering.
Who's they?
Officer, what was it? Bill Azua.
And was he alone or was he in company?
He had a company. I don't remember what the lady's name was. But
what did he say?
Really? He said a lot of weird things about him being off his meds. I remember a statement of that being said.
About your friend being off his meds?
No. The officer was saying that he was off of his meds and that people just need to go ahead and just chill out and talk to him. But really, anytime that we tried to say anything, he would immediately backfire, shut us down from ever even trying to talk, much less defend ourselves, and we only had to answer his questions like a computerized droid. Like, it was very non-human, non-professional, in my opinion, and it was actually just downright degrading, not something an officer of the law should be actually protecting us from. It felt like he was enclosing us, and he was just trying to do everything he could to be able to give us a ticket. Even towards the end, I stayed silent towards the entire time. Until the end. And he even tried to trip me up on my birthday, even though I am 23 years old. I asked him, I was like, would you like to see my license and registration, sir? He's like, no, just tell me your birthday. And every time that I tried to say something about when it was and everything, I would say what the date number was. It'd be like 4391. And the man was just like, what date is that and everything? It's 040391. January? It's like, sir, April 3rd. 1991, before you try to trip me up and try to find some sort of excuse to be able to give me a ticket. It was very downright degrading, and I did not feel safe on New Year's Eve.
And how long you been in town?
I've actually been in town for 2 months, so I'm only just trying to get to know some of the stuff around here, and excuse me for not knowing the street legalization rules and everything, which I can understand. We cracked open the beer, we had a simple sip and everything, and we were not going to get into anybody else's business. In fact, I was actually saving those for whenever we actually got to a safe place on foot and was just going to mind our own business.
Have you had any other encounters with police? Or?
So far, none, really. None that's really given me any kind of aggravated encounter whatsoever. Some have actually been nice around here, but there is just some selective ones who just feel like downright like I should be off the streets, or if I'm on the streets and anything and they are around, I honestly feel like I am not safe out here. I actually almost feel in danger because I feel like they are looking for excuses to be able to give us tickets, and if I have to deal with any kind of a ticket, I'm in major trouble with stuff back home. And I don't mean like, oh, somebody's going to yell at me back home. I mean financially my family is not good, and I came out here to do some stuff on my own.
And your name is?
Kyle, sir.
Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you.
Should be on free radio Thursday evening.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for that. Now, if you would actually like a more detailed account about a lot of stuff and everything, I do have my buddy over here if he is willing to talk. Yes. Would you be willing to say a couple things?
It's a judge, though, right?
Yes. Deneen Guy, I just heard, a judge guy, one individual sort of threw away the flyer we gave him because he said Deneen Guy had been so good to him. And the flyer does talk about Deneen Guy huddling with higher-ups the cage and crushed poor people for economic drug war or lifestyle crimes. However, apparently, according to his account, and he doesn't want to be on audio about this, she has helped him get vets benefits, she wants to help him get housing, and she's generally trying to be helpful. So he's a supporter of hers. He also knows she has a fire engine in the background, had never been ticketed for sleeping in the last 2 years, though he sleeps outside. He claims it's not illegal to sleep outside under a bridge, and it's okay to close the parks at night. That's one homeless man's opinion.
And I don't have the full rap sheet on Deneen Guy, who's a judge with the Superior Court. And it's quite possible that, you know, she really, in some sense, is not that much worse, or the others are not that much better. But she was instrumentally involved in the public hysteria task force charade that it was not really just a charade, that was the sort of props that created the upcoming anti-homeless laws, the anti-homeless laws that were created last few years, and the increase in policing, and the kind of nasty attitudes that are sort of circulating through the community that are being empowered under the kind of fantasy that there is a sort of a helpful downtown accountability project, a 180-180 program, now a 220-220 program, who knows, maybe a warming center on the horizon, though that's being done by, you know, private folks, that there are these real efforts being made to significantly help homeless people, and you just got to see homeless people as they're either mentally ill, or they're alcoholic, or they're drug addicted, or they're crazy travelers, or abusive bums, and, it's a public safety problem we're going to deal with, and they're also needle users. You know, there's a whole series of black jackets that are being placed on vulnerable people who... It's really disgraceful when a society does this, whether it's to Jews or immigrants of some kind, or Hispanics or blacks. It's maybe a traditional thing to do, Native Americans, but it's a kind of gross bullying that causes one, if I think one has feelings around this, a form of either anger or great sadness. And to me, anger is an appropriate response to this kind of abuse. And when Deneen Guy, puts the imprimatur of the courts and uses her position in the courts to help pass anti-homeless laws and engage in court collusion with this kind of mythology that there are avenues for homeless people to use in this county in a general way to get out of homelessness, or that there is some meaningful 10-year program or housing first program is horseshit, and it really it bespeaks the abuses of power. So I don't like the name Guy, and I wish I got more specific information on her. But again, I like most of these judges not very much. Let's hear some more, however, from the protest at Cop Corner, and maybe from you, 427-3772. You're tuned to Free Radio, in case you just turned in, 101.3 FM. It's a local Santa Cruz station. I'm concerned with abuses against poor and homeless people, as well as against tenants, as well against anybody who's suffering, I think, abuse from authorities in Santa Cruz. So call in, 427-3772. Let's hear some more, however, from the January 7th protest at Laurel and Center Streets. We're right on the sidewalk next to the police station.
So we have two individuals here who are new to the game, but they've stopped to look at the flyers. What have been your experiences with the police in Santa Cruz, if anything?
I haven't really had any experiences with the police yet. I haven't really had any negative experiences with them, but I'm sure that there's instances of, you know, brutality that I haven't seen or that have been going on. And I think that especially probably as someone, you know, I go to the college, I'm in the middle class, I don't think that I would necessarily be subject to harassment, but that in itself is a problem that, you know, I haven't seen it, I haven't experienced it.
Where are you from?
I'm from San Luis Obispo over by Cal Poly.
So you've been here for about a year or two?
Yeah, or only for actually a couple months. I'm a freshman.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And you don't have too much experience here. How are things in San Luis Obispo?
Honestly, it's kind of rocky, too. There's a lot of homeless out on the streets, and people are not always very nice to them. I definitely see police kind of going around. I don't know.
They're very condescending.
Yeah, definitely
they have
really condescending.
You two are from San Luis Obispo.
Yeah, we're friends.
Yeah.
Your name is?
Emily.
And you are?
Kendall.
You know who you are.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I do. I am very against the ban of camping, the camping ban, or the sleeping in your car bans.
And San Luis Obispo or Santa Cruz?
Both. We have that in San Luis and Santa Cruz, and I think that's incredibly unjust. And it seems kind of arbitrary and cruel. So.
Now, I know some years ago, San Luis Obispo attorneys took a parking law to court and won. What's the status now for people in San Luis Obispo who are homeless who sleep in their vehicles?
I know that there was a case where that was defended, but it's still, I don't think it's legal still to this day, but, and usually what happens to homeless people in San Luis is that they're kind of harassed into the outskirts of town, and they're forced, if they're going to park in their car somewhere, they need to go very far out away from any sort of necessities that they would need. Like, it's just unfair.
Any thoughts you have?
I don't have as much to say as Emily, but I want to get more involved. I think it's wrong, and I know that if I was on the streets, I don't even know what I would do. I can't even imagine how difficult it is. And it's not fair because we're all just people. We're all just people trying to get through our lives, whether we're police officers or students or homeless or anybody. We're just trying to get through, and it's not fair that we're, you know, putting up a hierarchy depending on how much money we make or where we're living. It's just not right. It's just completely against everything that should be what it means to be a human, to care for other people.
And we've been talking with
Kendall Mancini.
And with
Emily.
Thank you both.
I was gonna say my last name. Whatever.
And I'm looking at the Tribune from San Luis Obispo. Here's a story from January of last year. 90% of SLO, that's San Luis Obispo's county, homeless don't have shelter. Making the county the third worst in the nation compared with other small counties, according to the annual federal homeless assessment report. There are 2,300 plus homeless people living in the county. Only 235 receive shelter, according to the report. There's a homeless services center, oh boy, that phrase, in San Luis Obispo. And by the way, Janine Thomas, who's the new Monica Martinez of the Homeless Services Center in Santa Cruz, will be giving her maiden speech at City Council in the afternoon session at 2:30 for those who want to be there to hear it. Again, Huff intends to do a protest and a feeding and perhaps a speak out. Who knows what else we're going to do? We're still sort of kicking around some ideas at 2 o'clock outside the city council chambers, maybe even a little earlier. I'll have a stronger time nailed down by the Sunday show. Huff is having a meeting, for those who are interested, at the Putin Out Bombs meal, as I mentioned earlier in the show. And you can come at 4 o'clock on Saturday and join in the planning for a protest. Looks like it's going to be a protest both in the afternoon and the evening, maybe even the late evening. So it's going to be interesting. Talking more about that as we proceed.
I don't know yet.
They're a very... And it's now about 20 after 3, and it looks like the folks in the vehicles are giving us more thumbs up, occasional honk. So, anonymous. You say you have news from Fresno? Or?
Well, in Fresno, like in 2009, they had a big lawsuit because they were stealing their things, and they got a bunch
Kincaid decision. Yeah.
Yeah, that was really good.
Were you in Fresno yourself? Or?
I was, yeah, but I wasn't homeless.
And did any of your homeless friends benefit from that lawsuit?
Yeah.
Well, that's because I know I'm actually reading a book by a guy who wrote about that same period, Mike Rhodes, who's a community activist in Fresno. So, have you had problems here in Santa Cruz? Mentioned July 4th was a problem.
Oh, yeah. Crooked courts. Crooked judges.
Any particular judges you wish to single out here?
I can't remember his name, but Mr. Mohisian, again, seems to be a big player in all of this.
Who is this?
Darius Mohisian, Red Book Residential.
Huh.
He's a wonderful man. He's done this to a lot of people.
Landlord or...
Yep. He just throws this money around, and there it is. He gets judgment his way, even if it's not even a legal way to bring it into court. It's not on the paperwork. They'll throw it in there.
Now, how long have you lived here?
Since 2009.
And has this becoming more free? Thank you!
Yeah, I can't even get a place now.
You're outdoors.
Yeah, for a year now, my boyfriend died, and I was with him because of the landlord stealing everything and assassinating my character, basically erasing me as a individual. And so I've been out here a year now.
And how is it for a woman? Are you alone? Are you with somebody?
It's scary. It's like you're hunted, and you're afraid of the cops and everybody.
How are other homeless people treating you?
Good, actually. We kind of stand together and watch out for each other.
You sleep in groups?
I guess. Pretty much. Yeah.
And have you made much use of the Homeless Lack of Services Center?
Yeah, right. No, I don't go there at all because the people they have working there, it's a joke. They're belittling. They just single you out, and it's embarrassing. So I don't go there at all. They accuse me of doing drugs. Well, just because I'm on the street doesn't mean I'm on drugs.
What about Food Not Bombs? You ever been there?
Yes, I have.
What do you think of them?
That's great. I think it's wonderful because anybody who's giving help and feeding and we're not getting something bad from it, then I think it's good, you know?
Period. We can make this anonymous, or you can give us your first name.
Anonymous.
And thank you for telling us your thoughts. Anything you want to add?
We need peace, love, not war.
For sure.
That's real.
Thank you. I will give you a card.
No, that wasn't a chorus on the street. I'm not sure what that was. But we do have a quick flashback to the 90s, and a little musical flashback to temper this chitter-chatter. So stay tuned. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, freakradio.org.
Sure, what's up?
Are you aware of what's going on with the musicians' co-op down here? People are agreeing not to bother the
That's with
home.
Drummers.
But it's apparently in agreement with everybody down here.
What is it? Do you have it in writing?
No, I don't. But they're bothering the business here, and they want you to move along or keep it quiet if you could.
I have an hour, though.
As far as what we agreed in the musician's agreement, you have an hour from when you're told that there's been a complaint.
But if you're bothering a business or a person, they can have you cited for a peace disturbance.
No, I've been cited many times, and it's never made it through court. The DA laughs at it.
That may be, but I mean, if you persist, then you may have to go to jail tonight, and I don't think it's worth it if you're trying to be a musician and you want to entertain people.
So you're threatening me with jail?
I'm not threatening you with anything. If he wants you arrested, though, and you won't leave...
No, you have to give me a ride to sign a citation.
For once, for once.
He hasn't come out here to ask me.
And this is Skidmark Bob on his show, later playing a selection of Harassment on the Streets by one of the Downtown Association types. I assume that's who it is. And his response, which is, I think, very positive and healthy, which is just to continue playing. Skidmark has been accused of many things in his years as a performer on the streets. Terrorist singing, because he sang a song about shoplifting at the bookshop Santa Cruz. It's a Happy Fucking Day was another one of their songs. We have a caller, though. Let's take that call. Hi there. You're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert. This is Becky Johnson calling.
Hey, the beggar backer herself.
On my questionable smartphone that will probably drop me in the middle of something crucial.
Well, I know you...
Nonetheless, here I am.
Okay. I know that... You are a longtime activist and documentarian of all kinds of things homeless, particularly around homeless deaths, and you've been particularly diligent in pursuing those, whether the deaths have been homicidal, as in the case of Happy John Dine, or just the yearly, you know, roster of the dead from the homeless the memorial at the Homeless Lack of Services Center.
Yeah, it has been a sad task. But I have tried to get at least a copy of the executive summary and the list of names in the list of homeless deaths each year since 2000, when they started formally collecting statistics and publicizing them on an annual basis about homeless deaths.
Any? I know you've been preoccupied with taking care of a close relative of your own, your husband, who died recently. But have you? Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Have you any comments at all or thoughts on the homeless death situation in the last year?
Well, we had 38 homeless deaths officially. There's always more than the official count. That map mirrors the 38 homeless deaths the previous year in 2013. So we have made absolutely no inroads in preventing homeless deaths. These are really high numbers, by the way. If you compare them to other communities around the country, very few come up with statistics of homeless deaths as high as Santa Cruz, both the city and the county, and the city itself has a very high number of homeless deaths.
38 deaths is in the county, right, not the city?
It's for Santa Cruz County, yes.
Do we know the toll for the city, or?
They are itemized. They weren't always, but lately they have been separating them. And I don't have those statistics right in front of me, Robert. But it was something like 19 deaths in the city out of the 38, which is pretty high in a county of approximately 250,000, and we have a city of 54,000, if you don't count the university, and 19 deaths is very high.
So what's on your mind, Becky? You were calling in. Something we were
yes,
saying.
Yes, I am. I'm calling for a very specific reason, Robert. It's both personal, it's political, and it's moral. It's personal because, as you mentioned earlier, I recently lost a family member. My husband died on January 3rd after a 27-year relationship of which some of it was married and some of it we were divorced. Some of it we were divorced and living together. It's a very, you know, long, convoluted path there on that personal relationship. But my husband suffered from bipolar disorder, which he acquired in his service during the Vietnam War. And it was undiagnosed for a very long time. He struggled with it. He was very brilliant. He had an IQ of 165 and had a real talent for internet communications and telecommunications and that sort of thing, and worked in that field. But often something would go terribly wrong and he would quit or get fired or something after really doing a good job for a long time. You know, it was just sudden. But that's what it's like with a bipolar. Everything's great for a long time, and then all of a sudden everything explodes and is, you know, and you're left with the wreckage of that. And the bipolar themselves, when they get out of these episodes where they've screamed at everybody they know, called them every name, burned every bridge that they had, and then when they come out of this episode, there they are. They've destroyed their own network of support yet again. And it's a pretty miserable diagnosis, and it's not considered curable. All right, well, the reason I'm bringing this up is that my husband was a service-connected disabled veteran. That means that he became disabled because of what happened to him while he was in the Navy during the Vietnam War. And as such, he has accrued certain entitlements for that status of a service-connected disabled veteran. And one of those entitlements is that he is entitled to be buried with honor and dignity in a national military cemetery. He asked me before his death, he told me, he says, "Becky, my wish is that I get all of the benefits to which I am entitled and that you get all of the benefits to which you are entitled." That's all he wanted, what he was already entitled to. What I'm finding is that the Veterans Administration will pay $2,000 in funeral expenses, which is a ridiculously small amount when you're looking at a funeral that's probably $10,000 to $12,000. That's not the most insurmountable element of this. But now my husband is in a refrigerated locker right now as we're trying to find a place to rest for his final resting place. And the nearest military cemetery is in San Joaquin County, which is a 5-hour drive from my home. Why should this concern your audience, Robert, and which is so concerned with homelessness and with poor people? The Vietnam vets suffer more homelessness than any other veterans of any other recent war. One third of the Vietnam veterans suffered homelessness at some point in their life, and Mike was no exception. After a particularly bad episode, we had separated, and he became homeless, and I wasn't in any position to really help him. I was struggling myself, and he was living in a tent for several months. And it wasn't really until he got his benefits through the Veterans Administration, to which he was entitled, that he was able to get out of homelessness. But the Vietnam veterans, I really want to speak about them. This whole group of most 50% African American, this group, most of the veterans were low income when they went in, when these young men enlisted and went into a very unpopular war, a war that was ill thought out in the beginning, that the American public was lied to about, and ended up taking 50,000 plus American lives. And that's just the soldiers that we lost during the Vietnam War. What we found is three times as many as were died in the Vietnam War became homeless. 150,000 documented, and there probably were more. Not all of them were documented. Now the same generation of veterans who were literally spat upon when they came home, who never reached the bennies of a returning war hero and all that patriarchal crap, frankly, but they didn't get that. But the VA, Veterans Administration, also failed them in services and benefits. There was a lot of undiagnosed PTSD from Vietnam War, and bipolar disorder as well, which is a mood disorder, a mood swing disorder, and they're very common from the trauma that's experienced by military personnel on a very regular basis.
Let me press you, Becky, to try
sure.
to be more concise, because I'm going to have to roll shortly.
There are plans afoot for the National Military Cemetery at the former Fort Ord, but it's been stuck in committee for like 10 years, batted around, and nothing is sure about it going forward. I think the crux of it is that there's a lot of military personnel around Seaside and Monterey, and the powers that be do not want to see a bunch of rows of crosses there to see their handiwork, or to have young recruits drive by every day and see what may happen to them in the future because of their choice to be in the military. For the exact reason that they don't want to put in a military cemetery in Fort Ord is the exact reason that we must pressure them to do so. And we need to, because all the Vietnam veterans, they're the ones that are dying now. They're the ones that need to be laid to rest. There's a critical shortage of cemetery space. They're sitting on their ass at Fort Ord. They don't want to see dead bodies of soldiers. And I just want to bury my husband and have him and the other Vietnam veterans given some honor at the end of their life, when we certainly did not give it to them early when they came home.
Yeah, well, you know, can't agree with you about the honor, but I certainly about the right to, adequate and promised payment and benefits for the frankly, murderous service that everybody was performing during, and not just the Vietnam War, but the two Iraqi wars and the current, mow them down with drones in Afghanistan and the third Iraqi war that we're now getting into. I remember back in 10 years ago, maybe it was 20 years ago, Representative Farr was talking about, or someone was talking about, turning Fort Ord into low-income housing. There's acres and acres of buildings out there. I mean, it's just incredible. And I'm not aware that any of that has been done. Are you familiar with anything happening on that scene at all?
Oh, on that level, I think there was 28 units that were opened up for low-income or homeless, and that for the whole city of Seaside. And the city council of Seaside didn't want any more than that.
You mean units for 28 people?
28 units.
So maybe for 100 people.
Yeah.
And we're talking about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of units out there.
Right, because the Seaside City Council said, why should we bear the burden of all the homeless from all everywhere? Same old, same old.
Wow, Well, listen, thank you, Becky. I'm gonna leave it there. And
Robert,
yes.
I also want to announce that Michael Torpy, my deceased husband, his funeral will be on January 14th at 4 p.m. at the Mission Park Cemetery in Seaside, California. And I don't have the address right in front of me.
Right. Well, you just announced
I'll post it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you. And
and then anyone listening to this, please contact Congressman Sam Farr and tell him that we need to making a national military cemetery at the former fort or a high priority.
Thanks, Becky.
Thank you, Robert.
And I'd say my priority would be, you know, in getting some of those housing units, if any of them remain usable, obviously, for those who are still alive. I mean, yeah. I don't know what to say about what to do after you're dead. That's, to me, kind of a moot issue. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. We're listening a little bit of Just Kiddin' and some of the stuff from the protest yesterday that we did, trying to encourage the community to speak out on issues of police accountability, the fact that in Santa Cruz you are 7 times as likely to be ticketed downtown as an African American, as is your occurrence in the population, which is peculiar, to say the least. And here's a few more. I'm going to play a few more items from the... I thought I had more from the protest, but I don't. One kind of note on the protest. After the protest, I have been taking to parking in the police department parking lot. We at one time thought that police department parking lot was a very good place to consider opening up as a gone-by-dawn parking situation for those in their vehicles, because it was secure, it was well-lighted, there were a limited number of spaces, but they could be used by people who were in their vehicles. Police department vetoed it. They wouldn't allow that. I don't recall the reason they gave as to why they wouldn't allow it at the time, but we were looking for legal and safe places for people to park. The same issues are being raised by Steve Plage. The same issues are being, there's a program in Santa Barbara that is actually undertaken that by the county government. It's a very limited program, but it's a real one. And in Eugene, Oregon, and in Seattle, Washington, but not in Santa Cruz, California. But in any case, one would have thought that the police department parking lot is a particularly safe place. And indeed, I've parked there during several of the protests. In fact, I think all, at least 3 of the 4 protests at the right next to the area where we're protesting, although separated by a hedge. When I came back to my car and drove off, I noticed one of the tires started going thump, 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 and I pulled over, and it was flat. And I thought, who knows what that's about. I called the tow truck. Tow truck guy came down. He looked it over. We were able to change the tire. I thought first it might need to be towed, but it didn't, because I did have a tire. I thought didn't have a spare. And started to drive back up north, and I heard some really serious thumping. Pulled over, and I found that a second tire had been was flat. Well, it wasn't just flat; it was slashed. It was vandalized, and that had eventually I got the car towed. But frankly, it chilled me, and it saddened me that this was happening. And I don't know who did it. And I know that my car is very prominent. It's a car covered with bumper stickers. And it's kind of, like a walking library. I would agree with it. Most people find something either to agree with and disagree with on the car. Mostly to agree with, I got to admit. But this happened in the police department parking lot. And I'll be making a formal police report probably tomorrow about this issue. But it's the first kind of really serious vandalism that I've suffered in recent times. And I'm just wondering, you know, maybe there is a video covering that part of the parking lot by the police department. Would the public have access to that video? There's been talk about, you know, video cameras for police officers being a way of deterring police misconduct, or at least clarifying situations that come up where suddenly unarmed African Americans are found dead and police officers are standing there with smoking guns saying, he attacked me, or, you know, he pulled a knife, or he made a movement from his handband, or his headband, or his waistband, sorry, I'm never quite sure about that. And the idea is that the video would be helpful, and it well might be helpful. In fact, it's being proposed by Aram James over in Palo Alto, which is a city that has actually stopped the attacks, well, the official city attacks on people living in their vehicles, and essentially voted to restore the right to sleep in your vehicle, in part because of the Desert Rain lawsuit in Southern California that was successful, which overturned a Los Angeles law that was similar, and in part because there's a very active series of attorneys who don't just talk about taking lawsuits, but actually do it. And that's a matter of some encouragement to me when I read about that. I don't live in my vehicle, generally. But I've heard repeated stories of people being harassed, they claim, by Take Back Santa Cruz people. I'm reluctant to name any particular organization. I say, well, how do you know that? Where's your proof? And sometimes they said, well, the person said that they were, they get out of town and so forth. And there is a spreading sense of hatred and prejudice in the community that is masked by a sort of, I think it's deluded, if not hypocritical, presentation of homeless people, as I said before, as being a combination of mentally ill and addicted and alcoholic and undeserving and thieving and needle using, all these different groups which have to be treated differently. In fact, it's a whole bunch of people with one big problem. They don't have housing.